Well, hello everyone, and welcome to episode 5 of Less Talking, More Running, a podcast brought to you by Acliff Running Club. Before we kick on with what we've got planned, we're going to iconic runners, who am I? Now, unfortunately, Paul's not here with us tonight, and he's the one who planned this one. So I'm going to give you the first clue, and then I'll give you the other two clues later on in the podcast. So the first clue is, this runner has won 2 Olympic gold medals over the 10,000 meter distance, along with several other world championship medals, before they stepped up and had a crack at the marathon. So some food for thought there. A few 10,000 meter runners have had a crack at the marathon. However, how many have actually won a couple of gold medals? Something to think about. Now, we've got our first returning guest. It's Mr. Rob Nicholson. How are you doing, Rob?
All right, thanks, Corey.
And I'm also joined today by Angela Sutherland. How are you doing, Angela?
I'm doing absolutely fine. Are you doing okay, Corey?
I'm good, yes. Just trying to keep busy. I'm officially on my summer break from university, even though I feel like I've been on the summer break for the past 2 months, but hey-ho. Angela, I'll ask you this question, because we've asked this pretty much to every guest that's come on, so we might as well keep it a recurring theme. How did you get into running, and what led you to join Acliff Running Club?
Okay, Corey. Well, before I actually became a runner, I was a gym bunny, okay? And I had done a little bit of running, but nothing to write home about. And then a good friend of mine said to me, why don't you go up to the track on a Thursday night? So I thought, why not? So it was a Thursday night in March 2014, and I went up to the track in Shildon, and I've never looked back. And here I am now, a runner.
A runner. Yes. Do you remember what your first session was?
Well, I actually remember. I don't remember the actual session, but I remember going to the track and, you know, feeling a little bit apprehensive, because I thought, oh, they'll all be, you know, it'll be full of these amazing people and athletes. And I got there and everyone was super friendly. They made me feel really welcome. And that's when I thought, do you know what, I'm going to go back to another session. And, you know, still going to the track. Well, I was before lockdown.
And here we are, 6 years later, still carrying it on.
Absolutely.
Well, today's topic is the marathon, the big distance that every runner wants to conquer, if you exclude all the guys who do the miles, the 50 miles, because that's very extreme. But just focusing on the road, the marathon is the big one. So, Rob, how many marathons have you done? What's been your ones? Kind of give us an overview of the ones you've done.
To be honest, I've done quite a few, and I can't remember all the ones I've done. But I think I've done 9 Londons, maybe half a dozen Edinburgh, New York, probably half a dozen Manchester, Portsmouth, 20-odd Swaledale marathons, Durandale's Challenge. I've done quite a lot of over the distance, you know, over the years, over many years.
That's quite a lot, though. Favourite one, the one that sticks out to you?
My first one was on the 10th of July, 1983. And I think that's the best one I ever did. So that sort of sticks well. But I did enjoy going to New York. I've never been to America before, and in my old age, we went back in 2018 with Angela and Steve, and we all did the marathon, and that sort of caught us, you know. I really enjoyed that going to New York.
Right, Angela, how was New York for you then?
Well, Corey, I actually went to New York to run the marathon for my honeymoon. People have done stranger things, but I actually, so we went for our honeymoon, and it was a fantastic experience. New York was amazing, but it's the hardest thing I've ever done in my life, that New York marathon. It's hilly, and it was tough, very hard, Corey.
Did you enjoy it, though?
Corey, it was a fantastic experience, and I think I enjoyed it at the end when I crossed the finish line.
Yeah, I'm just moving on to. I just found some when I was doing a bit of research on, you know, I came across quite a few quotes that I thought that they caught my eye, and I just want to get your thoughts on it. So I'll rattle off a few now. So the first one is, so many people cross the finish line of the marathon look as happy as when they won. They have tears in their eyes. The sport is full of winners. Another one is, I've learned that finishing the marathon isn't just an athletic achievement. It's a state of mind. A state of mind that says anything is possible. And the last one is, everything you ever wanted to know about yourself, you can learn in 26.2 miles. So Angela, just picking up on that last quote there, over the course of the different marathons you've done, what have you learned about just yourself as a person, and the fact you've completed such a big challenge like that?
Well, I have to say, Corey, I did my first marathon in 2015 and I did Edinburgh. Okay, so I was an unknown to the club. I'd kind of joined the club in the March. I did my first race in the June, which was the April of 10K. And after I did my first race, I became addicted. So I booked the Edinburgh Marathon in the November and did it the following May. Now, because that was my first marathon, will always hold a special place in my heart. You know, it was a massive challenge. It was an achievement. But what I learned about myself was that you have to stay focused when you do something like that. It's a big event, and whatever you do in life, and especially a marathon, if you put the hard work in, you get the reward at the end. So I have to say that you know, when I crossed the finish line in Edinburgh, it was a life-changing experience for me. And what it meant to me is, you know, if I can run 26.2 miles, I can do everything. I can do anything in life. So basically, anything that comes your way when you've run them 26.2 miles is a walk in the park.
What about you? How did the marathon change your life, so to speak?
Well, I think it became a bit of an obsession with me. And I'm still trying now. I've got one more to do. And everybody will laugh at me saying that. Where I have one more to do when I'm 65, and then I'm packing them in. Apart from the Swaledale one.
Yeah, the Swaledale one's quite a common one for the club members, yeah. Isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I started doing that back in mid-90s. And I think we've only missed a couple. The one that wasn't on for the foot and mouth thing, and then this year it's been cancelled, obviously, for the COVID-19 thing. Mm. And but apart from that, I've tried to do every single one that since I first did it. Now I've done about 20 odd of them. Like, I always think that's probably my favourite. I love running down Swaledale. It's a fantastic experience, and the hills, and it's just a beautiful course.
Yeah, a lot of it's off road. Is that, am I right in saying that?
Yeah, that's right. You'll have to come down with us one weekend when we do a little recce.
Yeah, maybe a little recce.
That's Tracy. She loves it.
Oh, is that Tracy Surtees?
Yes,
season?
That's Tracy Surtees. She absolutely loves Swaledale.
I'll ask her about it.
I got lost on one of my little recce runs, and I think she caught hypothermia.
oh dear. Yeah, what's it like anyway, the Swaledale one? Because obviously road is pretty, the big road ones, you've got a lot of people, you can't get lost. It's near on impossible. What about the Swaledale one? Is there still quite a few people?
There's 500 runners, so you can't really get lost unless you're up right up the front. and if you're leading the way, you could probably get lost, but I mean, there's streams of people, there's 500 runners every year, so you can't really get lost. He says he gets lost every time he goes up there. Right.
Angela, so when you did your first ever marathon, did you have any sort of structured training plan to start off with?
Well, Corey, believe it or not, I didn't follow a plan when I did my first marathon. I actually trained with the club. So I did the Tuesday sessions, I did the Thursday sessions. and I ran with the marathon extraordinaires on a Sunday. I ran with the marathon gang. And what I did was I listened to every piece of advice that people gave me. And then I didn't, and I just kind of, I followed the advice and listened to, obviously, our marathon extraordinaire, Rob Nicholson. And, you know, I ran, people used to say to me, oh, are you following a plan? And I said, no. And I think they thought I was mad that I wasn't sticking to a plan. And I said, you know what? I'm running with my heart and I'm putting one foot in front of the other. And that's what I did. And when I did my first marathon, Corey, you might be the only person in the world who doesn't know this, I actually got a good for age. So I was unknown. I got a good for age. And then kind of on the back of that, I got into London and I did London 2 years in a row. And then after that, I decided I would follow a plan. But no plan on my first marathon. In a way, when it's new and unknown, it's good when it's like that, because then after that, the addiction kicks in, doesn't it? The addiction of, because people say when you run a marathon, you'll either never run one again or you'll become addicted. And I became addicted. And then with the addiction becomes the addiction of the time. You want to beat your time. We've all been there. We all still do it now, don't we?
Just the unknown. Do you feel, looking back now, do you feel like you ran better because, well, I don't know how your times, if it improved or not, but you feel like running with no pressure, you could enjoy it a lot more for what it was?
I was mega focused at the time and kind of, at the time I used to ring my best friend, Alison, and she used to say to me, I can't hear you. You're going through a tunnel, because I talked about running and the marathon obsessively. But yes, I believe because it was the unknown, you kind of, you know, you don't know what to expect. But then after that, you know, you kind of, I wanted to be, well, if I say, not necessarily more prepared, but you want to beat your time. And then that's when you think, well, you know what, I'll follow more of a structured plan.
Yeah. Rob, what about looking back to 1983 when you did your first ever one? Did you ever have any sort of training plan to follow, or did you take a similar route that Angela took?
Well, I've never actually followed a proper training plan. I mean, you know yourself, you can go on online and they all have the Runner's World and Today's Runner and all these old magazines used to stick training plan after training plan on in the things. I think it's usually a 16-week training plan for a marathon, to build up for a marathon. But I think I had a basic grounding in distance running anyway by the time I did my first marathon. And we were doing long runs on the weekend anyway. And I'm a great believer in the two fast sessions. We do the Tuesdays and Thursdays fast sessions. A midweek average length run, maybe 8 to 12 mile. And a long run on a weekend. And I think as long as you build up with chuck the odd half marathon in on your training training plans, and and it's always good to do a 20-mile race if you can find one shortly before, just to see how well you are going, I think. We always used to do that. But I've trained with loads and loads of different people from the club, from Julie Beckford, John Armstrong, and right through now, and to train with Angela and Susan Cranswick, Michelle and Jason Dixon. I've trained with so many people over the years, and I've never really believed in doing a proper structured thing, because it's too easy to miss out on a training session, and then you get it in your head. You get it in your head that you've dropped behind on your training, and it sort of messes with you a bit, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I do. I know what you mean. Just from when I've tried to follow some sort of structured training plan for any race, I think that I've learned that there's no perfect training plan, and two, if it should be very much adaptable. So you're changing things all the time. So you can't very much be straight line structured. You're changing things all the time. So keeping it loose, like you said there, you've got your two speed sessions, a medium length run, and then your long run on the weekend. Just keeping a semi-structured plan is just as good enough as anything, really.
Yeah, I think it keeps you prepared for any race as well.
Oh, definitely, yeah. And I think you both mentioned there, just running with your friends and a group on a regular basis can help. Just running by yourself can be quite mentally tough at times.
Well, I think you can see for yourself that when you train with John and Des and them, it pulls you along and all, and there's a little bit of competition there, whatever, isn't there, you know?
Yeah, maybe not with John and Des, but yeah, it was like Richard and Tracy, yeah.
Yeah, but I know you know what I mean, though. You, you're still up there with them, aren't you?
trying. But yeah, it's just the camaraderie of being with your friends and running. Especially must help long runs as well when you're out for a few hours at a time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've run with people who've... You find out some people break down and just lose the plot altogether on some long runs. You know, they'll just say, I can't. And if there's a group of you out, you just got to help each other along, you know. Especially when you start getting up to 20 milers and 22 milers, it's not easy to keep going.
So I think it's time for clue number two of Iconic Runner, Who Am I? This person has set a massive 27 world records career, and they also have 4 consecutive Berlin victories to their name. Very impressive resume so far. So, Angela, just from the advice you've picked up and the different marathons you've done, what have been the key lessons you've learned for yourself and adapted to how you train and run for marathons?
Well, Corey, I think the key lessons I've learned is that, yes, if you are going to follow a plan, I know you've touched on it, you know, things can be changed, you know, you have to be adaptable. Obviously, we still have to go to work, you know, you might become poorly. Stay focused, but also focused, stay motivated. But, you know, if, for example, you don't get that long run down, and if you've got a long run on a Sunday and it's a 20 mile and you don't make that, it's not the end of the world. You know, you can adapt, you can change things, you know, just to keep focused. And also, running with other people is a great motivator. You know, you run with other people, you help them, they help you. It's all about the team spirit, because when we train with each other, we train as a team. But on the day, on the race day, it's about you, and it's about you doing your absolute best. So, you know, everyone helps you on your journey to get to that final race day.
Yeah, I agree with 100% all of that. Rob, what about you? What have you learned of the many marathons you've done?
I don't think I've learned enough, because I'm going to do another one. I think you just learn to push yourself as far as hard as you can. And I think I've found out how stupidly stubborn I am. I think if you get to the race day as fit as you possibly can, anything could go wrong. It's 26 miles and it's too far to run, really. You've got to have a certain kind of stubbornness in you to keep on going, you know.
Have either of you thought about fueling, like with gels and that?
But Corey, I'm the type of person that I actually need to take on fuels and energy to keep me going. And when I did Edinburgh, which was my first marathon, when I started to do the long runs, I started to train with the gels. And then anything over 13 miles, I would carry a little water bottle so I could practice. Mm. You know, I had a thing in my head where I would have a sip of water at every mile to keep hydrated, and then, you know, have the gels every, say, 4 or 5 miles. So I kind of, you know, I began with the gels in the water. But I have to say, after Edinburgh Marathon and having about 7 gels, I've never had a gel since 2015. But basically, I've tried shop blocks, I've tried Cola Sweets, I've tried Jelly Babies, I've tried Minstrels, I've tried everything. But you have to try different things to see what's going to suit you on the day.
Rob, have you ever tried anything like that, or is that just...
To be honest, I'm a great believer in drinking water. And water, I know they give electrolyte drinks and all nowadays, but when I first started out, I just drank at the water stations on the way around, and I've never ever carried. I believe in running a marathon as lightly as possible. Vest, shorts, shoes, and that's what you need. Socks, of course, I would. And that's all you need to run a marathon in the modern day as well, like, because they have so many water stations, you can overload on it. I have taken the electrolyte drinks as well. At London, they always had like little sachets of Lucozade. I used to maybe take a swig out of one of them and then leave it. Like, basically, I've only ever trained drinking water. I mean, it suits me, but I know a lot of people. I mean, training methods and things like that, and feeding methods have changed, haven't they, over the years? And they give you all these gels and stuff to. You're supposed to boost you, but they just upset my stomach, so I don't bother with them, you know.
Yeah, I made the fatal mistake of, I did the Edinburgh Half Marathon a couple of years ago and never had a gel before in my life. But I got so nervous that I bought two just before I started. And then the mate I was running with had whatever he carried on him. And I had three during the half marathon. So it was horrible. The last 3 miles, I just had a massive sugar crash. Yeah. And those last 3 miles felt like 6 miles. It was horrible. So it's something you've got to learn. If you're willing to go down that route, you've got to learn and make mistakes and things like that. But you're right, it's different for everyone, really, isn't it?
Yeah. I always remember 1 year. it sounds like good. I actually measured how much was in a mouthful of water. And I drank exactly, I think, I can't remember exactly. It was back in the 90s in one of my London marathons. And I needed 3 mouthfuls of water every 3 miles. And that's how I ran the marathon. Just because it was measured and because I'd read about this, keeping hydrated and how much you actually needed. So I followed that instruction and I still didn't get a PB.
Angela, when you run the marathon itself, obviously you start off quite comfortable and you think, well, not as easy, but you're in your comfort zone, so to speak. But as you go on, what are the different type of thoughts that come into your head that can maybe make it hard? Because just for any long run, you do. It's the more mental side comes into it. So what are the thoughts that come into your head during the marathon and how do you cope with them? That, you know, the voice in your head is saying, just stop, or so you want to carry on.
Yes, Corey, I agree. Whatever race you're doing, especially a marathon, it's mind over matter, okay? So I have a mantra, which I've done through all of my 4 marathons, and my mantra is, no matter how slow you are, don't stop running, okay? So I have this mantra which goes through my head. Like I say, no matter how slow you are, don't stop. You've got to keep the momentum, because personally for me, if I stop, I feel like I fail, which is, you know, it's just how you feel personally, isn't it? And what goes through my head on that day? A million things, Corey, but it's about staying focused. You know, you're going up in the miles and, you know, kind of the reverse psychology. You've done 10 miles, for example. Oh, only 16.2 to go. You know, keep yourself focused. And I also have another little mantra. Smile all the way, because you never know when you're going to get papped or be on the camera. Okay? So smile all the way. Don't stop and just, you know, you've worked hard to get to that point, and just, you know, stay focused, stay sane. Well, or try to stay sane, and enjoy it. That's a piece of advice I would give to anybody. You know, unless you're Rob Nicholson, you might not do as many marathons in your lifetime. So, you know, it's a fantastic achievement. There's only a very small percentage of the population that have run a marathon. So you enjoy every single mile. Oh, Corey, do you fancy doing a marathon now? Have we persuaded you?
Nearly there. I feel like I have to anyway. It's in my head that at some point I'll have to. But I say, I've promised to myself that I'm not doing my first one until I'm at least 30 years old. So I've got another, just over 5 years left.
You will do one before you're 30.
I think that we are.
I know.
The way I take it off from the start line, I aim to run at a certain pace. And the thing is, at the start of a marathon, is to be controlled and stick with your plan. You've got to have plan A and go with it as far as you possibly can. So when I'm running a marathon, I'm just concentrating mile by mile on hitting that pace all the way. And I know by mile 18, I'm gonna start to feel it and slow. And by about 18 miles in your legs, you really start to feel it, and it's hard to keep yourself positive, you know. But I always try and concentrate. I always count up the miles to 13, then count them down after that. But also try and keep your pace and stick with your pace. If you set off too fast, you're gonna die early on. You've got to stick with what you're capable of. And I'm a great believer, if you can run a faster short race, like a 5 and 10K, if you run fast 5 and 10Ks, you can keep that pace going for a lot longer.
Do you think you have to be very disciplined in your approach when you're running one to keep that pace and not go too quickly?
Well, yes, and especially when you're lined up with people from the same club, it's sort of everybody's trying to be the best, aren't they? You know what I mean? You've got to be. I think it is very difficult not to set off too fast. Especially if it's like Edinburgh. These last few years we've done Edinburgh, and it's pretty much all downhill for the first 5 miles. And it's if you let your legs run away with you early on, it catches up with you halfway, and it'll start to catch up with you too early anyway. Mm. I mean, I did the Kielder Marathon a couple of years back, and got to mile 10, and there was people going. It was quite a fair steep hill. I mean, not massive, but a fair steep hill. And everybody was starting to walk up this hill, and I thought, well, if I start walking up this hill now, I'm going to be walking half the way around the rest of the marathon, you know. As soon as you hit another hill, you're going to be walking again. You've got to get it in your head and get yourself up them hard bits, and it keeps you going.
So, Rob, what's the last one? Marathon, where's it going to be at? Is it Edinburgh?
Well, I've got my entry for Edinburgh next year. I'd like to do London one more time, like, to be honest. But I suppose if I got an entry, I could do them both, like.
Make it the magic 10 for London.
Yeah, I always thought I'd done 10. When I've counted up, I've only done 9, so... It's got to be rounded up, doesn't it?
How's London changed over the years you've done it? Obviously, it's got bigger in terms of the participation numbers. What else has changed?
I think the feeding stations have changed. They have them every mile, I think, now, or just about every mile. And they used to have them every 3 miles. But I think it's become a bigger thing. There's more people out on the streets watching. The crowds are bigger. I think it's become just a massive part of London life, you know, that one weekend.
Mm. So, Angela, since you've got the marathon, is there any special ones on your to-do list? Obviously, you've done big ones like New York, London.
Well, Corey, at the moment, I'm in retirement. However, never say never. And I think if I was, I think if I was going to do another one, I think Boston is definitely on my to-do list. Like I say, never say never. Watch this space, Corey. You never know, you and I could be marathon training together, Corey. How exciting will that be?
You never. That is. I'm sure I'll learn a lot from you. A lot. As well as you, Rob.
I'll have to fetch my bike.
The first one of the ones I do want to do is Dublin Marathon, because there's a plaque on our wall downstairs from when my granddad did it. I think it was mid-80s at some point. I think it's 87. So say in 7 years' time, will that be 40 years? Yeah, 40 years, the 40th anniversary. I want to run the Dublin Marathon. So that's definitely on my to-do list, as well as the iconic ones like London and, if I'm lucky enough, New York.
Yeah, I think everybody really wants to do a marathon, and eventually everybody gives it a try, don't they? You know, it's just one of those things that if you're a runner, you just give it a go, don't you? I mean, there's not many people in the club who haven't given it a go once, at least once, you know.
It's definitely a runner's bucket list, isn't it? It's a, well, some runners.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely on the bucket. So I think it's time for clue number three of the iconic runners. Who am I? So the final clue is, as a child growing up on a farm in Ethiopia, this runner used to run 10 kilometres to school every morning and then 10 kilometres back at night with their school books cradled in their left arm. This led to a very distinctive running style where they could run with a crooked left arm as if they were carrying these school books.
Gebre Selassie.
That's right, Rob. You got it nailed. Did you have is that a well-known fact about him? So I didn't know that.
No, but as soon as I think it had to be him or Bekele, but I don't think Bekele's has actually run that many marathons, has he? Gebre Selassie was, I mean, he's everybody's idol, isn't he? He's probably one of the greatest runners there ever was, like.
Oh, certainly, 100%. Do you have any memories of Gebre Selassie? Like, is there any moments that stand out in his career when watching him on TV?
Well, all of his 10,000 metres on the track, he was fantastic. He was great as a marathon runner. I can't think of any that it sticks out particularly for us. He wasn't the runner that I followed, but I think he sticks out like you know what I mean? He sticks out in the crowd.
Yeah.
I can't particularly think of anything that he did. He was always thereabouts on the track on them 10,000 metres, wasn't he?
Yeah, who were the runners you followed? Rob?
Well, to be honest, it's a bit controversial now, but Alberto Salazar was my favourite marathon runner. He was a phenomenal trainer, and I just loved the way he trained, and it's just a shame that he's been involved with this Nike thing in America lately, hasn't he, with the drugs and everything.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. And unfortunately, it's always the names, isn't it? Like, yeah. Lance Armstrong in cycling, for example. Angela, do you have any running role models?
Well, I have to say Mo Farah. He's my absolute favourite.
He's meant to be coming back to the track for the Olympics, which is all going to be moved to next year. So it'd be interesting to see how he gets on.
Yeah, it certainly will be, won't it? Later.
Yeah, because he obviously switched to the marathon. He did very well. He won the Chicago Marathon. I think that was a couple of years ago now. Yeah, but obviously when you've got Kipchoge just absolutely dominating the scene, it's very, very tough. I think we're close to wrapping up. Really, I think we've touched on it already. Advice you'd give to runners who are wanting to take on marathon for the first time. What would be just one piece of important advice you'd give to them?
Well, what I would do is I'd just build your mileage up gradually, and stay injury free, and that's the way to go about it, and generally race, because you don't. A lot of people make the mistake of training. They train for a marathon and don't do any other kind of races, and they're not used to getting up to that start line and ready to race, if that makes sense.
No, it does, yeah.
They haven't got the mentality to actually go out and race on the day, because they don't do it. Do 5, 10 Ks, 10 milers, half marathons, and 20 miles, and incorporate them into your training. And then you're used to standing at the start line of a race, because people just, honestly, over the years, I've seen so many people just go to pieces on the start line and get so nervous about racing, you know, and I can't understand why.
Well, after, you know, my, you know, obviously I'm not as experienced as Mr. Rob Nicholson here, but what I would say is, you know, keep focused, keep motivated, but, you know, if you don't do that run, or if you're not following your plan, you know, to the day, to the hour, it's not the end of the world. But I still think, you know, still run with your friends, run with the club. So incorporate, you know, what you already do with kind of increasing your miles, and don't get too het up on, oh, I have to do so many miles a week. You know, you do what you feel is right for you. And then, you know, if you put the effort in, you know, when you get to that start line on the day, it will pay off. And also, most importantly, keep the PMA, keep the positive mental attitude, and you can do anything.
We need to get that on a T-shirt as a slogan, keep the PMA.
Yeah.
Well, you've both been absolute wonderful guests. Is there anything else you want to add to talk about?
Well, I just like to say, you know, running a marathon changed my life, but also since I became a runner, that's changed my life. And it's all thanks to ARC, because I've met some absolutely fantastic people at the club and made some fantastic friends. So just all I would say to everyone is carry on running, carry on regardless.
Yes, especially in the current circumstances. I think that's brilliant what you said there, Angela. And I'm sure if people are listening who are not necessarily from Aycliffe Running Club, but running for another running club, hopefully they can relate to the same, because I think running clubs around the Northeast and the UK do a fantastic job. I just want to also mention quickly that Andy Talbot has added all previous episodes onto our club website. So thanks for that, mate. As well as also on Twitter and our Facebook page as well. So please do check them out. But I think that's it. So thank you very much, guys, and goodbye.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you for having me, Corey.